The next case of the morning is number 02-1494, the United States against Jose R. Martinez. Kruger.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Charles Krueger and I represent Mr. Martinez. And this morning, I just really want to make two points. One is the fundamental point that the search of Mr. Martinez's apartment was unreasonable and it was unsupported by probable cause. The affidavit alleges that his apartment was Helton's setup, that it was his base for his drug dealing elsewhere in Harrisburg. And I think that's also another fundamental point that the affidavit stresses, but I don't think is really appreciated in the lower court's decision, that Helton is somewhere else in Harrisburg dealing drugs, and the police are watching him dealing drugs. And they've seen Helton go back to this house one day. They saw him go back there twice. And then 12 days later, they happened to watch him. They decided to surveil the house. They watched him leave the house. He did a drug deal, and he comes back. That's really the only evidence that the police have that links Mr. Martinez's house to Helton, or even to Helton's drug dealing, if you want to make that link. But there's really no evidence, nothing that a reasonably prudent person could do to reason that Helton's going to this place because it's a setup. They've never seen any illegal drug activity there. This isn't the case where they've seen Helton bringing drugs into the apartment or taking drugs out of the apartment, bringing money into the apartment, taking money out of the apartment. This isn't the case where they know, well, there's suspected drug dealers who live in the apartment or known drug dealers or past drug dealers. They don't even know who lives in the apartment. They never seem to make any attempt to find out who lives in the apartment.
But there were several purchases, and before and after each of the purchases, the seller arrived at and departed from the apartment that was searched.
There was only one purchase, and that was the September 25th purchase, where the police called Helton. They watched the apartment. They watched Helton leave the apartment. He sold his drugs, and then he went back to the apartment.
So just one time that apartment was observed.
There was a September
back and forth
was just one time. And then there was on September 13th where they made two purchases from Helton. And the first time they followed him back to the apartment, and for whatever reason, maybe they just left or they didn't watch him anymore. And then they arranged for another purchase later that day, and they followed Helton back to the apartment.
To the same apartment.
The same apartment.
Right.
And those are the only facts that they have really linking the apartment. Now, I have to also remind the court that there's two other purchases they made where they didn't see Helton, or they didn't follow Helton, but there's no record of Helton going back to the apartment. There's a September 12th purchase, and there's a September 18th purchase. And either the police didn't follow him, or the police followed him, and he didn't go back to the apartment, and that's just not in the affidavit. So one of the two. But see, you can't even really make the argument that they saw him regularly going back and forth from the apartment, and that you could somehow then infer that the apartment was his setup where he dealt drugs.
He did say it was very close to where he was making the deal.
Right, Your Honor. According to the confidential source, the person whose police had arranging the drug deals, he told him that he was set up near a Huck store. And
this apartment was about a block away.
It was about a block away, Your Honor, but saying you're near someplace, in a way it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, if it was three blocks away, they'd still be, well, it was near, or four blocks, or five blocks away. It's near the Huck store. My colleague told me today, the train station is near the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeal, so I walked. It's not that close. And I also have to remember, Your Honor, that the confidential source didn't give him any description of it. It's not a matter of, you know, the government argues, well, there's no law that says a confidential source has to go to the apartment, buy drugs, see drugs there, or anything like that. And we don't make that argument whatsoever. But the confidential source couldn't tell the police where it was. He didn't say it was even east of Huck's store or a block away from Huck's store. He just said, it's near a Huck's store. And I've never been to Harrisburg, but I've looked on the map of Harrisburg. Harrisburg's not that big of a place. And so I don't think near is a very good description of where this place is. And I think the only thing that's linking, and it's in the words of logic, it's the warrant, the reasoning that the court below used to uphold the warrant. And it's that a drug dealer regularly goes to and from his place of dealing after he makes drug deals. And that's really the heart and the key is this court going to really endorse that reasoning? And I just don't think there's anything in the record to support it. There's no testimony by officers, experienced law enforcement officers, that say, yes, in my experience, drug dealers generally go back and forth. And there's really just the judge below saying, well, that's good enough for me.
And that's a real problem for you, isn't it, the fact that the magistrate approved it? I mean, there's no evidence of bad faith on the part of the officers, is there?
No, you know, we don't make any allegations of bad faith. We don't say that the magistrate somehow overstepped his bounds and was acting in bad faith, but I don't believe we have to. I don't think those are the only ways that a warrant is considered unreasonable and therefore the good faith exception doesn't apply. I think Malley versus Briggs says that there's just times when a magistrate will issue a warrant that a reasonable police officer knows, when you look at the warrant, that shouldn't be issued. And I think here you have a private residence that the police know absolutely nothing about, that they've seen a drug dealer go to on occasion, not regularly, but on occasion. And based on that, they think they can search the private residence. And there's no connection. And I think for me, the key is they have no idea who lives in this place. Nothing whatsoever. This is complete mystery to them, yet they went in there anyway. And I think there's other cases, you know, I went through in our brief and we cited the Seventh Circuit cases that try to show that there has to be some sort of nexus or link between the place to be searched and the drug activity elsewhere. And I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Kruger. We'll hear it out from Mr. Norwood.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is George Norwood. I represent the United States. One thing is clear in this case, and I believe it was just all but conceded by the opposing counsels, that the officers acted in good faith. The officer went to a magistrate, had the magistrate review the application for the search warrant. The magistrate determined there was probable cause and issued the search warrant. In addition, Senior United States District Judge, Judge Foreman, looked at the same affidavit, which was the basis for the motion to suppress, based on the same facts, also determined there was probable cause. Does not appear to be reasonable that a special agent would somehow not believe there was probable cause when both a magistrate and a senior United States District Judge found that probable cause did exist. So, the Leon exception, assuming this court finds that there was not probable cause, the Leon exception applies and the search should be upheld. But there is probable cause. One thing is clear, Mike Helton had access to crack cocaine. He sold crack cocaine on September 12th, $300 worth to the confidential source. On September 13th, he sold another $300 worth of crack cocaine to the confidential source. After that transaction, Helton goes directly back. He didn't make any stops, went directly back to the residence. A few hours later, that very same day, he sold $400 of crack cocaine to the confidential source. Again, he went directly back to the residence. On September 18th, he sold $200 worth of crack cocaine. What's important also is that on September 24th, which is the day before the search warrant, Helton tells the confidential source that they're going to be receiving a large quantity of crack cocaine. Helton tells the confidential source, we're set up right next to this Huck store in Harrisburg, and the residence is one block. We're not talking near, when you talk about near and something's less than one block, that's near by any sense of the definition. So they set up a transaction for the next day. The next day, the confidential source purchased $400 worth of crack cocaine from Helton. Law enforcement officers surveil Helton from the residence to the drug transaction. While at that drug transaction, which is recorded, Helton tells the confidential source that Helton had 3.5 ounces of crack cocaine left to distribute. And then immediately following the crack cocaine sale, the law enforcement officers follow him directly back to the residence. I believe Judge Foreman said it better than anyone could. Common sense dictates that a person who sells drugs has to obtain drugs from their base of operations in order to go to the transaction and sell it, and then return there to deposit their ill-gotten gains. And common sense is what dictates how this court should, and how any court should review an application for a search warrant. The case law is replete with references that applications should not be analyzed in a hyper-technical sense or isolating facts one from the other, but just common sense approach, whether or not it's probable that there are drugs and other evidence of illegal narcotic trafficking in this case at the residence. Doesn't matter who lives there. Doesn't matter if the officers don't know who lives there. What's important is that there's probable cause to believe at this particular place there's particular evidence of a particular crime. And again, the magistrate and the United States District Judge found probable cause existed. If there are no further questions,
thank you, Mr. Norwood. Mr. Krueger, if you have 3 minutes left.
I want to make a few points, Your Honor. First, I think it's very key to remember the agents wanted to search the house. Yes, the affidavit has an abundance of evidence more than established that Helton was a drug dealer. They repeatedly sold drugs to him. That's fine. But they wanted to search the house. It isn't an arrest warrant for affidavit. It isn't even an affidavit to search Helton's house. They didn't know if it was Helton's house. They didn't know whose house it is. And I think it's kind of an off-the-cuff dismissal to say, well, the police don't really have to know who lives there. That's true in some circumstances. If the police watch people going in and out and doing drug transactions, maybe they don't have to know who lives there. Once again, we'll concede that too. Another point I want to make is we're not saying, when we say that we don't believe the police acted in bad faith or at evil intent, we don't think the police were lying. We don't think the judges were lying or anything like that. But we don't think the good faith exception applies because the agents should not have brought the search warrant to start with. A reasonable, well-trained police officer would have looked at this affidavit and noticed what we want to do is search the house. We're saying nothing about this house. We don't know anything about this house except that a person we know who sells drugs, we've seen him go to the house. And that's it. That's the sum and the total of their information about this residence. And if this warrant is upheld, then I guess we have the idea of, yes, for whatever reason, we can start to assume that wherever we see drug dealers go, if we see them go there, because, you know, drug dealers, they must go back and forth and they sell drugs to get their stash or get their money to make all these other factual assumptions that the magistrate and the district judge had to put in their opinions to justify upholding the warrants. Well, yeah, then we're basically, in my mind, we're through with having to have an ask who lives at the house or how do we make a connection. And that's basically our argument, Your Honor. And if there's no further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Krueger. We thank both counsel. Mr. Krueger, with special thanks to you from the court for having accepted the appointment in this case. We appreciate the time that you and your law firm put in, given your client such an energetic defense. Again, our thanks to you as well, sir, and the case is taken under advisement.